What is up, everybody? Welcome into the second half of Sports Talk. This is the sixth day of 2026. Welcome into this Tuesday edition of Sports Talk. We got a bunch to get to in this hour, talking about the Saints, their number 8 overall pick in the upcoming draft. We're going to talk to Justin Mello, who covers the NFL for the Draft Network, after the first break, and an early look at some of the options for the selection for the Saints. We talked a little even in triple option just previously with Mike Dettillier about that. And at 7 p.m. tonight, all you hoodouts don't want to miss, Voice of the Saints, Mike Haas, for the final Saints Hour of the season. And it is a delight. Mike scored some great interviews with quarterback Tyler Shuck, defensive end Cam Jordan, also Chase Young, center Eric McCoy. Find out how he's doing in his recovery from injury, cornerback Alante Taylor, kicker Charlie Smith, and offensive tackle Taliese Fuaga. I know if you love Saints football, you're not going to want to miss this Saints Hour coming up 7 p.m. on WWL 105.3 FM and the Odyssey app. I say that because 7 p.m. over on 870 AM. We got busy times over here with the Pelicans tipping off in the Smoothie King Center against the LA Lakers. And I'll be curious to see what kind of showing we get from LA. We're going to see a full LeBron James and Luka Doncic's taste of them this evening. I did see a tweet earlier, the fact that Herb Jones, thankfully, will be back in the lineup. I don't know how much he'll be playing, but man, oh man, Charlie, you know that the Pels can surely use some of his defensive presence back in the lineup, because it seems like they've been a sieve giving up points lately.
It hasn't improved. I mean, the game against the Heat, and we'll be pretty brief about this, there's so many moments where it looks like they're not even giving effort as far as grabbing boards or defensive pressure on the opponent. Like, guys, you got to start winning some games here. Like, you're not necessarily out of it as far as the Western Conference 10 seed race kind of goes, because the West isn't necessarily as deep as many expected it to be entering the year, but you got to start winning games, Steve.
You're being the complete optimist right there, saying it's not, you know, a wash right now.
It very well could be. I'm just trying to say, like, look, it's going to be a complete wash if you don't start, you know.
I know things turned around a little bit. The Pels went on a little bit of a run, but now they've been back in the losing, you know, the trend again, and have dropped 7 straight.
It's an effort thing. And I have my criticisms of Coach Borrego as well, but when the players on the floor aren't putting forth the effort to win, you can't really do much as a coach.
Yeah.
So that's just my opinion.
Talking about effort, one guy we have seen a ton of effort for this season, unfortunately, had a ending to his season in the last game of the season, and Chris Olave ended up finding out he was dealing with a blood clot after coming back this season and really shining after dealing with concussions. You heard talks about him considering retirement. Loved an article you saw on ESPN's Bill Barnwell put out, some of his MVP and top rookies, best coaches, all the, you know, season award picks for the year. And for him, well, his offensive rookie of the year, he doesn't even mention Tyler Shuck, so I don't like that part. But on his comeback player of the year, he's got Saints wide receiver Chris Olave as the guy winning that award. And, you know, that's over the likes of Troy Fatanu from the Pittsburgh Steelers, also Aiden Hutchinson from the Detroit Lions, just because of the season that Olave was about to pull together. And he was talked to in the locker room as the Saints players were cleaning out their stuff, you know, going into the offseason. He's going to be going into the last year of contract next year. Totally mentioned the fact, obviously, he wants to be back in black and gold here, loving Kellen Moore, what's building here with Tyler Shuck, and also about the injury, discovering that blood clot. Enough of me. Let's hear about from it with Saints wide receiver Chris Olave right now.
How are you feeling, and how did you kind of discover that you had a blood clot, and what went through your mind when you heard that?
I feel good right now, you know, just taking it day by day, trying to get better. But it was kind of weird because I felt like I had a bruised rib, like, after the game Sunday night and Monday night. It was tough kind of rolling over in my sleep, but Tuesday got kind of worse, and then I contacted the trainers, came in at like 5 o'clock, and then they thought it was a kidney stone at first, but ended up going to the hospital, getting CAT scans, and they found a blood clot.
Did they tell you kind of right away that, you know, your recovery should be good, or did you kind of worry there? Like, you know, blood clots can be kind of serious.
They was all in the hospital with me, all the trainers and the Dr. Amos. They told me right away that I was going to be good, so I just kind of followed their plan and trusted their work.
Is that a football-related issue? Like, was the blood clot created by a hit or something?
I don't know. They still trying to figure out where it came from, so I don't really know where it came from, so I'm still trying to figure it out, too.
Of course you would have liked to finish the season, but how are you feeling mentally?
I feel good. I feel real good. I feel like I'm in a good place. I feel like I had a good year to my standard. I feel like I left some yards out there, but I feel like I had a good year, and we finished the year off strong, especially with Tyler back there. I'm excited for next year.
Chris, how much more can this offense unlock when you have a quarterback who's solidified in position and everybody's kind of locked in?
It just gives the confidence in us. The first part of the route is not open. He can extend plays with his legs. He's faster than people think. He can get outside the pocket. And he's looking to throw the ball down the field too. So, like I said, I'm excited going forward. We got a great quarterback.
Chris, whenever we asked you about your contract, you said like I want to, you know, reestablish myself as kind of the number one. Do you feel like you did that? Like, did you hit your goal of being that number one?
Yeah, I feel like I did. I mean, it's all up to the front office at the end of the day. I feel like I did that, especially these last four or five games. I feel like I made it clear that I could be that. So it's all up to them at the end of the day. I feel like I did my job.
How much does it help? Like, there hasn't been a ton of stability between, like, play caller, quarterback, everything kind of being in place, knowing what it is, built towards something. How much do you think that helps just the future for you and the offense?
Man, it helps a lot. It helps a lot. I feel like the first couple of years, it was hard to be able to say that was stable, but it helps a lot with the bigger picture. It makes me want to stay here even more. I know what's going to be here with Kellen. Tyler's, like I said, Tyler's a great quarterback, and that's probably the main two things you need as a receiver. So it makes me want to get that contract done even more, and hopefully it happens soon.
How did Kellen kind of play into, you know, your positive impression of this franchise, and how did you see him kind of grow over the course of the year being a first-year head coach?
Oh, he's great, man. He's a great, like I said, from the beginning of the year, I love Kellen. He's an offensive-minded coach, but even through the adversity, he stayed who he was. He never pointed the finger at nobody. He just kept going and stayed positive, and he's a great leader. He's done a great job this year, and it's going to be even better moving forward when we get back to winning.
There's always a level of team that you can see when they kind of believe. I mean, it doesn't matter who's out there, you know, kind of just that fight. Did that develop over the course of the season? Because you look at the roster that went out there this week, it would have been easier to kind of fold up, but they kind of pushed it to the end. Like, what is that?
I feel like it's been like that all year. Even in the beginning of the year, it was always one-score games or a close game where we could have won the game, but it was just mistakes we was making. It didn't matter who was going out there. Even with Spencer at quarterback, it was always a close game, and everybody was fighting to the end. So I feel like that's just the culture that Kellen brought in. Everybody's connected and locked in to one goal, so and that's winning.
That was Saints receiver Chris Olave speaking to the media after the Black and Gold finished their season and now get ready for off-season stuff. A lot of folks doing rehab in the facility, like guys like Eric McCoy, who you hear on the Saints Hour coming up at 7 p.m. We're taking a break here on Sports Talk. When we get back, getting more into Black and Gold discussions, talking draft. Justin Mello, who covers the NFL for the Draft Network, joins us talking about that number 8 pick for the Black and Gold and who are those top names available out there that could be on Kellen Moore's wish list. We're going to come back with more of Sports Talk right after this, folks. Stay tuned on WWL. Who dat? Welcome back into Sports Talk here on WWL. Steve Gell along with Charlie Long. And happy to welcome in now Justin Mello, who covers the NFL for the Draft Network, as we get ready for the offseason. Even though we got playoffs to talk about this weekend, there's a lot of teams already looking ahead to the draft, man. And Justin, you know, Saints fans are already picking away at that number 8 pick, trying to decide what this Black and Gold bunch should do with that selection. So I was like, man, let me call a guy I feel knows so much about this draft. And all of a sudden, you know, the Senior Bowl is coming up too as well. I know, see you out there. Just a fun time with the offseason coming up and so many of these prospects to talk about. Is there anything at number 8 that stands out for you as a must for the Black and Gold that if they're available, It's like it's a no-brainer. And a lot of folks right now, to me, I think the most popular selection is if Jeremiah Love, the running back from Notre Dame, is there. A lot of folks seem to be locking in as that as their wish list number one pick for the Saints.
Well, I think the New Orleans Saints are entering the draft in a really good position. You know, being at number 8 overall, a little bit lower than most of us expected at the beginning of the year.
Right.
It's a good problem to have, right? I think you look at the way the year ended. They finished hot. They won a bunch of games in a row at the end there. Coming out of this season, I think they probably learned two things that every NFL franchise in their position wants to learn, right? It's that, hey, we believe we've got a good head coach, right? That's number one. They took a bit of a chance on Kellen Moore. Anytime it's a first-time candidate, there's always the risk there that you don't know how it's going to go. I think Kellen Moore did a great job in his first season in New Orleans. You feel real good about that. And, of course, you feel good about the quarterback. You know, Tyler Shuck steps into the lineup roughly midway through, a little earlier than that, and really played like a franchise quarterback down the stretch, right? So they enter this draft going, we believe we've got our coach and we believe we have our quarterback. They've got some young pieces on the offensive line. They spent back-to-back picks there at offensive tackle. So they feel good about how they have fortified that unit. They're in a good spot. You know, I think you look at, I don't know, I wouldn't go as far to say best player available yet. Yeah. I don't think that roster is quite in that position. But I look at edge. You know, this is a really good draft, at least at the top at the edge rushing spot. You know, Cameron Jordan's not going to be around forever. I know Saints fans would love to put him in like one of those chambers and keep him around, but I don't think he's going to be there forever. I look at certainly someone like Jeremiah Love. You got an offensive-minded head coach who you believe in as a schemer and a designer of plays. You'd love to see what he could do with a talent, dynamic talent like that. Certainly Alvin Kamara, I would maybe put in the Cameron Jordan bucket, is not going to be around for much longer. I look at maybe a supporting wide receiver to get in that offense and help the young quarterback. I think they could use another cornerback at some point as well. But they're in a really good spot to probably stick and pick at number 8 and know that they're going to be able to get a really good prospect that will address one of their needs.
You know, Justin, I think it's interesting. There's 3 potential edge rushers that go in the top 10 here, with Ohio State's Arvell Reese, Miami's Reuben Bain, Texas Tech's David Bailey. All 3 of them are kind of different in different ways. I just want to get your thoughts on those guys, because like you had mentioned, edge rusher Cam Jordan's not going to be around forever. Maybe if the Saints don't go with an offensive weapon like a lot of folks are saying they might do, if it's not Jeremiah Love, then going with one of the top weapons at receiver, because there's a few of those that are going to go in the top 10 as well, that one of these top premier edge rushers in the top 10 picks could potentially fall to them at pick 8 and they could jump on it.
Yeah, this is a fascinating discussion at edge. And by the way, I could have the same discussion at wide receiver, because
right.
I think there are 3 guys that are all different and have question marks. But at the edge spot specifically, you know, my rundown, Arvell Reese might have the most athleticism and probably upside of the 3. He might also be the biggest projection, right? He was playing off-ball linebacker at Ohio State. It really bummed me out that down the stretch of their season, the Buckeye season, Matt Patricia, their defensive coordinator, wasn't giving him a whole lot of opportunities to rush the passer. I mean, selfishly, I would have really liked to have seen that from an evaluation perspective. He had no sacks in his last 6 games, but you've got to watch the tape. He wasn't rushing the passer anymore. He was playing a bit of a C-ball, chase ball, off-ball role. And, you're projecting that he's going to be an edge rusher. Now, listen, there are a couple guys in recent drafts that do him some favors, right? You look at the transition that Micah Parsons made. You look at the transition that Abdul Carter made. I could see Arvell Reese following a similar path and making a similar transition. But right now it's a question mark, right? Because he didn't do it with a lot of consistency at Ohio State. When I get to Reuben Bain Jr., he's responded to the criticism in recent weeks in stunning fashion. He's been really good throughout the college football playoff. Really good game in the first upset there over Texas A&M. And then maybe an even better game in the stunning upset over Ohio State. You know, what scouts are saying about him is that he's going to have real short arms, right? When they get to the measurement process, just to give you an example, when Aiden Hutchinson was coming out, and you might recall, we had a similar discussion about arm length. His arms aren't long enough. In fact, probably a big reason why the Jacksonville Jaguars didn't take him at number one overall. Well, here's the comparison for you. Aiden Hutchinson had about 33-inch arms, right? And we called that short. Reuben Bain is going to come in around 30 and a half, 31. I mean, it only sounds like two and a half inches. It is unprecedented when it comes to arm length at the edge rushing position. It's unbelievably short. We're talking about a 2, 3, 4 percentile result in the arm length department. So, yeah, scouts are going to have a real problem with that. It's one of those things they're very nitpicky about. In fact, it's got some of them claiming he might be a three tech, a defensive tackle at the next level. And that almost puts him in the Arvell Reese conversation. It's a bit of, if you think this guy's got to switch positions, then it's a projection. You know, I like him out on the edge. I don't think it's straightforward to say that he's a defensive tackle. When I watch him rush the passer, I think he does a great job with that distance between him and the tackle. He's able to get some build-up speed, some build-up power. You put him inside there at the tackle. Now you're talking about him fighting in closed quarters. I don't know that I feel the same way about him. So that's a huge question mark we'll be tracking throughout the process. As though when you get to David Bailey, the questions are different, but I still think there are some concerns there. Now, listen, he's probably got the most polished pass rush arsenal of the three. Certainly, you watch him on tape, speed, athleticism, turns the corner really well, wins that outside shoulder, can bend and turn the arc. No doubt about it, he's athletic. I think he converts speed to power at a high level as well. He's got a great spin move. Like, this is a diverse pass rush arsenal. But he is a little bit undersized to play on early downs. And a lot of times, Texas Tech was taking him off the field on those run-stopping downs. Now, that's one of those things where you might say, you're overthinking it. The guy can rush the passer at a high level. He had 14.5 sacks this year, led college football D1 with that amount. He was phenomenal in that playoff loss against Oregon. Really did his pre-draft stock a lot of favors. But the teams, you know, they get nitpicky over that too. They want you to be able to stop the run early down. If I'm picking a guy at 5, 6, 7, 8 overall, I don't necessarily want him to be a situational pass rusher. I don't want to have to take him off the field occasionally. So I think all three of these edge rushers, the valuations are very different. All of them have their questions, and it might be a pick your flavor. You know, not everyone's going to rank all three of them the same way.
Looking at some of the wide receivers, Justin, with that 8th overall pick, you would think maybe you would have Carnell Tate from Ohio State or a Jordan Tyson, Arizona State, available for the Saints to select. Do you see either one of those two as a better fit than the other in Kellen Moore's scheme?
Well, I look at what Chris Olave does. You know, terrific short to intermediate route runner, can play the Z, can play the slot. I think if they want to diversify their pass-catching corps, both of them can probably play the X spot. I think Carnell Tate's got a bit better size out there on the outside. Might be your prototype X receiver. But I think Jordan Tyson is really good playing outside, too. And I think he's got the frame to go up and make contested catches. He did that on tape a lot at Arizona State. So I certainly think both of those guys might be able to fit what Kellen Moore is looking for. I can get long-winded at receiver, too. You know, I think with Tate, I do think he's probably going to be the wide receiver one in this draft, but I don't know that I see a high-end elite prospect. Now, the Saints may not need him to be that guy because you pair someone with Chris Olave, you don't need to be a Jamar Chase when you've got Chris Olave opposite you, right? Like, you don't need to be a guy that needs to see 15, 16 targets every single week. You need to come in and play your role, play opposite Olave, be a sort of a maybe a 1B to his 1A. And I think you feel good, really good about Carnell Tate in a role like that. I think the ceiling is probably higher with Jordan Tyson. I mean, if he can stay healthy, and that's the big question mark with him, I do think there's a bit more potential to explore with his upside. Now, the elephant in the room is he's missed about 40%. And I've been saying that number purposely because I wanted to scare you because I want you to understand what you're dealing with here. He missed about 40% of his college football career with injury. Now, he had the torn ACL many years ago at Colorado. He seemed to get past that. Some of the other stuff has maybe been a little freakish, maybe some bad luck, collarbone, He had a hamstring. Certainly hasn't repeated the season-ending variety of injury. But, you know, when there's smoke, there's fire. Why has he had so many of these sort of little nagging injuries that have caused him to miss, maybe you'd even say a significant amount of time every single year? There's something that seems to sideline him for 3, 4, 5 weeks every season. And it's always something different, right? It was the knee. It was the collarbone. It was the hamstring. So there are going to be question marks about, you know, the medicals are going to be huge for him throughout this process. I also really like Mekhi Lemon out of USC. You know, I don't think people are including him enough in this conversation at wide receiver. I'll read you two names that are going to do him a lot of favors. I talked about Abdul Carter and Micah Parsons being a good example for Arvell Reese. Well, in Mekhi Lemon's case, it's Amon-Ra St. Brown and it's Jackson Smith and Jigba, because, you know, here's a guy in Mekhi Lemon that doesn't have the size to play outside. He's certainly not going to play X in anybody's offense. Maybe there's enough versatility to play Z, but he certainly looks like an everyday slot, right? He, just like some of those guys, JSN and Amon-Ra St. Brown, he quickly uncovers. He's a QB-friendly target, really good at creating separation. He's also outstanding at making contested catches for his size. I don't know that I've ever seen a 5'10 receiver with his ability to go climb the ladder over defenders and come down with those 50-50 balls. So I'm not saying he's going to be the first receiver drafted. It'll probably be Carnell Tate or Jordan Tyson. But whichever one of those guys is your perceived number two, don't be surprised if Mekhi Lemon gets drafted ahead of that guy.
Lemon catches everything. Justin, I mean, anything that's in his vicinity, as you mentioned, he's fantastic. And he plays so much bigger than his size, because that is the number one detriment to him. But he is super, super electric to watch on tape. My last one for you, I wanted to bring up Caleb Downs, because, Justin, I know we've talked with you in the past about positional value and how certain positions like running back and safety are a little bit devalued. And that's maybe why Caleb Downs might slide a little bit in the early first round. But if he's there at pick 8, I think the Saints would potentially run that pick up to the podium and feel pretty good about it. Having Caleb Downs, Jonas Sanker as your safety duo of the future, but Downs, his positional versatility as a safety is, I think, what also makes him really impressive. You see some of these players that teams draft in the first round or maybe even early second round, like Iman Wari last year for Seattle, where you can play them in a couple different spots in the secondary and it enhances their value for your defense. I just think Caleb Downs, if you're talking about players you would bet would have double-digit NFL careers, that you think they're going to be in the NFL for a long time, long productive career, I don't think it really gets any further than Caleb Downs.
He's the best prospect in this draft. He's number one on my big board right now. I'll tell you, the comedian in me finds it hilarious that if you were stacking a big board right now and just say, who's the best overall prospects, regardless of positional value, is it not a safety at number one and a running back at number two? Like, it's got to be Caleb Downs and Jeremiah Love. They are the most straightforward evaluations, the best, most dynamic prospects in this class. So I'm fascinated to watch this process unfold for them and see where they end up, because, yes, the positional value conversation, of course, it's a very real thing. And you know, we're talking Caleb, but in Jeremiah's case, you know, you saw a team take a running back at 6 last year. It didn't work out well. The Raiders are a disaster. That might impact the conversation around him. At safety, I mean, I remember when Kyle Hamilton might have been the best player in the draft, but went like 14th overall, you know, partially due to the positional value question. So it's fascinating to see what's going to happen with a prospect like Caleb Downs. But I will say this. I don't think this draft features a lot of high-end talent, right? Like, we just asked a bunch of questions about the three top edges, the top wide receivers. There is no straightforward offensive tackle that's the best tackle in this class. Like, the best one might be a guard, right, in the Miami kid. So you look at some of the premium positions, edge, wide receiver, offensive line, none of them are just straightforward, right? There's not a guy that would be a no-brainer number one pick if this wasn't a quarterback's draft. So I wonder if that, because that's a fact in my opinion, right? Like, this is not a high-end talent draft. That might get teams to say, forget the positional value. I'm just going to take Caleb Downs here at number 3. He's not going to go number 1. I don't think he's going to go. I mean, he could go number 2 if Dante Moore doesn't declare. But I think teams are going to be more than willing to kind of overlook the positional value thing and say, hey, I'm just going to get a Caleb Downs or I'm just going to get a Jeremiah Love because I like them a lot better than what else is available. It's going to be fascinating to watch that process unfold for these two prospects.
Justin, always top-tier breakdowns from you. Appreciate the time as always, man. Thank you.
Pleasure was all mine. You guys know where to find me.
Thanks, Justin.
Justin Mello, you can find them at the Draft Network, covers the NFL there. You can follow them also on Twitter or X at JustinM_NFL. You heard him. Great info there. As always, from Justin Mello, we're going to take a break here on Sports Talk, coming back with more right after this. Stay tuned, folks, on WWL. Welcome back into WWL. We're getting ready for the Saints Hour coming up with Mike Hawes. He's got a heck of a lineup with him on the finale of the Saints Hour. QB Tyler Shuck, defensive end Cam Jordan, along with Chase Young, Eric McCoy, Alante Taylor, Charlie Smith, Taliese Fuaga, you name it. It's on with Mike Hawes and the Saints Hour this evening coming up at 7 p.m. on 105.3 FM and the Odyssey app. Meanwhile, 7 o'clock over on 870 AM, Pelicans taking on the L.A. Lakers. Going to get into our talk and text line. GM James on the line. I see you want to talk about pick number 8 in this draft. What you like, James? What's going on, man?
Yeah. So I'm with Charlie. We talked about Downs, but here's the thing. You got to get this kid some weapons, speaking of Tyler, because there's enough game tape on him by now that if you roll out the same guys, he's got no weapons, and his sophomore season is going to be tragic. But when you look at the division, it's no wonder, and this is really key, and I want you guys' opinion on this. When you look at the division, it's Carolina in order, Carolina, Tampa, Falcons, and us. That was the chronological order, how we finished the division. It's no small wonder to me that on both sides of the line, in the middle, Carolina has the best middle offensive lineman. They paid two guards a few years ago, so they got the best middle as far as offensive guards are concerned. They got the best middle on the D-line with Derrick Brown. And then you look at Tampa, same thing. They drafted good guys. And then Atlanta, you know, they got some decent guys like the guy Lindstrom or what have you. So in order for us to really win the division, we got to get better in the middle. But we got to get this kid weapons.
We're with you.
Yeah.
We want to improve the middle. Yeah. The interior of that O-line definitely needs a boost.
Go ahead.
Because Breeze, as much as I like Breezy, he's a pass-rushing guy, but he's no good, you know, defending the run.
He's 6'5". Yeah. Teams can get, or offensive guards can get under his pads and just move him off the ball in the run game. So I'm right there with you. As far as improving the interior offensive line, Mike has said in the past that he wants to address it in free agency.
Yeah.
I'm with him, but I also want to get a guard in day two. Not day one, right? Like with the 8th overall pick, we just talked to Justin Mello from the Draft Network. He gave a lot of really intriguing prospects that the Saints should target, whether that be offensive weapons for Tyler Shuck to help his development entering year two and help him make that year two leap, or even some defensive studs as far as the defensive linemen at the top of this draft class, or even Caleb Downs, who, as he mentioned, is his number one player in the entire draft. The reason he might be there at pick 8, he's a safety, and safeties are devalued in the draft. Same thing Jeremiah Love, the number two player in his draft rankings, could be there at 8 as well because he's a running back. And offensively, running backs are devalued. So there are options for the Saints at pick 8. I think that, you know, they're going to end up with a stud there. But as far as moving ahead to day 2,
yeah,
James, that's where I think that you start having the offensive guard conversation, maybe getting an interior defensive lineman as well. And then we'll see, you know, there's a couple pieces on the interior offensive line. I know the Penn State kid is going to be probably an early day 2 pick. So that's the good part about having these early picks and not having traded your draft capital last year, is that you don't just have pick 8. You have an early pick on day 2, second round, third round, and you can kind of continue to build inside and out with those early selections. So I think it's going to be fascinating to follow. We'll do a little bit more of a deep dive into later selections, but just kind of early on, we're in January. We're talking about the 8th overall pick because it's real flashy. But the Saints have some great opportunities later on, day 2 and day 3, to really kind of build the meat and potatoes of the team.
And Charlie, I would say that the 2025 draft was a pretty darn good success, and I'd love to see them be able to duplicate that kind of return for this season.
Early returns are very positive.
Right.
And I don't think there's any question about that, but you got to do it again. And that's how you build a roster up, through the draft. Continue to hit on these picks. Continue to build the foundation that Kellen Moore kept talking about during the Saints coaches show last night. bring in these fresh young pieces to eventually take over for these aging veterans. And that's how you build to the future and build a playoff roster. So I think the Saints are in a good spot for, just like Justin had said, with pick 8, but also those early selections on day 2 and day 3, that they'll feel good about themselves grabbing not just, you know, the flashy talent with the 8th overall selection, but also some really strong players to kind of build out the roster as well.
Bunch of positivity for the black and gold. I love it right now. We're going to take a break here on WWL, coming back with more. We'll wrap things up on Sports Talk right after this. Stay tuned, folks. Well, everyone, that's a wrap on today's edition of Sports Talk. I want to let you all know that tomorrow's show, it is Drew Day. Soon to be Pro Football Hall of Famer Drew Brees is going to join the Cajun Cannon, go QB to QB tomorrow. That's at 4:10 p.m. Plus, they'll talk a little bit about the NFL playoffs, I'm sure. And we'll do a recap of GM Mickey Loomis and head coach Kellen Moore's season-ending press conferences. Oh, yeah, by the way, you can hear that live, 11 a.m. We'll be carrying that for you. Me and sideline reporter Jeff Nowak will be joining Newell Norman, anchoring that live coverage as we bring you Kellen Moore and Mickey Loomis's season-ending press conferences tomorrow. Thanks a lot for tuning in this evening, folks. Stay tuned, all you hoodats, for the Saints Hour with Mike Haas coming up next here on WWL 105.3 FM and the Odyssey app. Have a great night, folks. Who dat?